Hello, I'm Brian.
I'm Caroline.
I'm Claire.
And this is the Computer Weekly
Downtime Upload
Podcast.
Welcome back to the podcast. We're back from our Easter break. Delighted to say we've got Claire back in her rightful place too. We're recording on Friday the 17th of April, the day after the lockdown was renewed for 3 more weeks. So we thought we'd kick off with a quick run around of what we've been doing outside of work to keep ourselves amused, to keep ourselves entertained. Caroline, do you want to go first?
I've basically been spending a lot of time outside, which not breaking lockdown, just in case anyone stopped dialing 999 on me. In my garden, getting back to nature. I've been doing a lot of gardening. Well, I'm trying to grow my own vegetables. Got 2 guinea pigs at home, and we are struggling a little bit with getting enough fresh food for them in the supermarkets at the moment. Turns out growing vegetables takes quite a while. So in terms of trying to replace that, they are going to have to starve for a little while. They don't have access to all the fresh basil that they used to get. So all that's going to have to take time to grow. So yeah, gardening, trying to become a little bit self-sufficient. Found it online. If you cut the tops off, which we do when you're feeding guinea pigs, the tops off lettuce and put the bottoms in water, they regrow. So we've been doing that. So they regrow and then they get roots, and then we've been planting those outside to try and kickstart some veg patch action as well. So yeah, lots of gardening, just staying outside, and crucially staying away from people as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. I've seen some of your pictures on Twitter with the guinea pigs and the experiments to give them more greenery.
Range. Yeah, I had to relocate this week, actually, just for logistics purposes, into the guinea pig room, which is our spare room at home. And so I set up like a camping table and a patio chair. So I've got like it's supposed to be a desk, but it's just, if you're an ergonomic expert or a chiropractor, you would probably look at my setup and just cry. I was on a call early this week, and halfway through, the guinea pigs just started running around, chasing each other, having a bit of a fight. And I was just sitting there like, please, I really hope no one can hear this on the call, because I wasn't on video. So I was like, how do I explain all this racket going on? It sounds like there's too many sumo wrestlers having a Barney in my bedroom. So so I was like, oh yeah, just carry on, guys, no noises. And so it's been fun adjusting to life under lockdown, trying to work and stuff.
That sounds brilliant, though. I would gladly be on that call.
Well, yes, I'll see if my interviewees agree. If ever it happens again and it gets a bit louder and more. Yeah, guys, I've got to cut out. I've got to break this up, sorry. talk amongst yourselves.
And Claire, you've been watching a fair whack of telly.
Yeah, I've gone for a more indoor approach. I have a garden and outside space. I just haven't really used it. So I just have been inside watching telly, trying to occupy my brain. I've been doing a lot of doodling as well. So yeah, doodling on work notes. I doodled on a flower pot just to take my mind off of stuff. That's all you need, a flower pot and a Sharpie.
Yeah.
And off you go. So yeah, most TV I've been watching, and I've almost run out of things. So any suggestions?
What's been your favourite thing on telly?
Oh, I don't know what my favourite thing would have been. I'm quite happy to see that Friday Night Dinner is back on Channel 4 on a Friday night. That's quite fun. At the end of the last season, I didn't think that there was going to be any more, so it's nice to have it back. It's quite funny. I'd recommend that.
I set out with some really grand plans, like I was going to make some progress on my novel. I was going to teach myself to play guitar properly. But not a word have I written and not a strum have I strummed. A little bit of reading. I've just taken delivery of The Mirror in the Light, the Hilary Mantel volume 3 of the Wolf Hall thing. So quite looking forward to that. Like Claire, watched a lot of TV, enjoyed The Nest, partly because got to see a bit of Glasgow, my native city, which I dearly miss. I have tried watching some cool stuff. So I started Devs, which is a sort of science fiction-y, techie thing, with AI and encryption and all sorts of stuff, quantum. But I have to say, the thing I've most enjoyed is Gavin and Stacey.
I can't really cope with anything too... My attention span is just a bit short at the minute. I don't know if that's because of world events or whatever. But yeah, I read the description of Devs and thought, that sounds a bit too much like work, or like a busman's holiday. I need something kind of light. And so yeah, we've been watching a lot of Race Across the World. Which is a game show where couples either like know, they might be partners or they might be like family siblings or things like that, have to embark on this competition to race each other across the world, which you just think that would be impossible now. Everywhere's on lockdown. there won't be a series three of this. But no, that's quite good. It's quite easy watching. That's, yeah, anything I can really cope with at the moment is easy watching, easy listening, easy everything, really.
Yeah.
I finally watched all four of the Hunger Games films. My friend lent them to me on Blu-ray. I think I had them for a few years and I just never watched them. She took them back recently and she was like, they're all online now, so you can just watch them there. I was like, okay.
Yeah, that's good, because usually when that happens, I'm like, you know, I've had your DVDs all this time and I didn't watch them. Like, I'm going to watch them now on Netflix. No, but yeah, it's good. It's good that you did that.
Yeah, because I had time.
Devs is one nice thing about Devs is you get to see quite a bit of San Francisco. Not a lot, but it's all beautifully shot, including the Salesforce Tower at night. What could be better than that?
Does it light up?
It looks very impressive, yeah. It is quite beautiful. It's visually very visually stunning, actually, as a program altogether. Gavin and Stacey is much more of a comfort watch. We enjoyed that, but 100% more. Top line on the podcast, guys, it's mostly going to be Corona again. We wish it were not so, but it is. Caroline, you're going to touch a little bit on what comes after, how we're likely to have been changed in terms of work and practices and stuff. Is that right?
Yeah, it's kind of looking at how technology is helping us through some of the challenges that are being posed around, you know, the toll that self-isolation and stuff like that is taking on people. And
yeah.
And yeah, looking at that, and also, yeah, a little bit on how things might change, you know, given that everyone is suddenly having to work from home. But I don't think working from home to this extent is like the norm for the majority of the UK workforce. So suddenly having to deal with that, yeah, just touch on that a little bit about how that might change things in the future, like people's attitudes to working from home.
Cool. More on that in a bit. And Claire, you're going to talk about the mental health side of working from home.
Yeah, I've been trying to look into how some people are coping with managing teams remotely and looking after the mental health of their teams. And I've also been looking at some of the official websites such as NHS and the Charity for Mental Health Mind, just to see how they say people should be looking after themselves at the minute.
More on that in a bit too. I'm going to talk about how the data science community is rallying to the cause. And specifically in the story I'm going to talk about, it's looking ahead to economic recovery and trying to kind of help with identifying signs of that. So it's not data science in terms of tracking the virus, which we published quite a lot of stuff on Computer Weekly about that, but it's not about that. But we're going to start with Caroline.
There's been quite a lot of commentary about the fact that in one way or another, we are, if that's the right phrase, quite fortunate that the pandemic is happening now at a time when, you know, smartphones, PCs and internet connectivity is sort of so pervasive and accessible to people. You know, if this had happened, say, 15, 20 years ago, if you were all told to sort of stay indoors and not leave the house, it might be a little bit harder for people to cope with, given now we are so reliant on kind of streaming services to entertain us in the home. But also, you know, smartphones and sort of broadband and stuff like that do make it a lot easier for people to keep in touch in sort of a variety of different ways. Whereas you think, yeah, a couple of decades ago, it would be landlines, you know, you're relying on that to try and, you know.
Done this now.
Yeah, exactly. So one thing that has become demonstrably more popular since the lockdown began is sort of video calls and video conferencing technologies. To the extent, actually, I've started to strictly enforce certain rules about how they're used with like the people I know, but also like sort of work contacts as well. I don't know if it's the same for you. I had a little moan about this to Claire earlier this week about the fact that lots of phone interviews I'm doing now, by default, they seem to have been upgraded to video calls. And I'm like, no, this is a phone interview. I am not, no, I'm not doing a video call for this. So I'm very militant about it. Like, as soon as I log into Zoom or, you know, whatever the messaging or whatever the communication platform is, I'm always like straight to no video, you are not seeing me here. And it's, you know, you don't need to see me if you're talking to me, and we wouldn't do that on a normal phone interview. You know, if I'm interviewing a CIO or a contact, I don't need to see them, kind of their reaction to like some of my questions, or if they look a bit befuddled when I start making a sort of, I share some kind of half-baked or completely off the mark observation about what they've told me. I don't need them to like, what's he talking about? Like, look on their face. I can imagine that in my mind. I don't need to see it happening.
No, you don't.
Real time. So, so a side point, but honestly, if you're listening to this, a lot of video calls that you are scheduling probably could just be emails, in the same way that a lot of real life meetings could just be emails as well. So just put that out there. There are moves though within the tech industry at the moment to go one step further than video calls by combining sort of virtual reality and personal assistant technology and cloud to create more sort of immersive and socially engaging environments where people can meet up and communicate, and not just in a work environment, but just sort of in their leisure time as well. And this is something that we've written about this week, and it's a collaboration that's going on at the moment between IBM and University College London. It's hard to pin down, actually, from reading this, whether or not, if this is work that was in action before the pandemic came to the fore or anything like that, or whether or not this is something that has been prompted by the pandemic specifically. So this work is focused on how can you make people feel less isolated and lonely, particular focus on the elderly, in sort of these situations. So, you know, video calling and conferencing is great, but there is still a sense of, you know, you're not really in the same space together still. It's hard to put into words, but it's still, you know, how can we have people sort of feel like they're in the room together when they're communicating a bit more? So this is what a lot of this work is focused on, how to make that kind of a reality. And so one of the things they're working on, they've got a number of different projects on the go, but one that our colleague Cliff wrote about this week, it's a proof of concept that relies on IBM Watson technology and IBM's cloud platform. And it basically makes use of Watson to create a sort of customized, immersive social experience, as it says, using virtual reality to make people feel less isolated. So how it works is it uses virtual reality to create a kind of socially engaging scene, as it says. So that might be a restaurant or a park, for example, where you and your friends can sort of meet up and sort of interact with each other within these environments as you're having a kind of catch up sort of with each other, sort of on like in a video kind of avatar kind of way, I'm guessing. And just like I say, just to so you're communicating, you also feel like you're there in the moment with each other, you know, bring people a little bit closer. It's a proof of concept at the moment, but I think just like reading that, I think you can see, given the situation everybody's in the moment, that things like this, like innovation on these lines, could become sort of more prevalent or be spurred on by the pandemic, you know, particularly as it goes on a lot longer. And I don't know, one thing that just got me thinking about is, well, at the moment we're all stuck at home, but usually this time of year we're at a lot of conferences and things like that, in, you know, these huge conference centres and stuff like that. But could like a setup like this, where you have virtual reality, you know, you set up and it kind of makes people feel like you're in the same room together, could that have an application within sort of conference environments? Because, you know, rather than, because it's quite a, if you've done any of the virtual conferences, they're quite passive activities. You've got your headphones in, you're watching a keynote, but you know there's lots of distractions going on around you. You could easily just get up and leave and just like, okay, well, that's me out of that conference now. So I think something like that might make people like, oh, I actually feel more like I'm actually there, or I'm, you know, interacting with people a bit more. I think there could be applications for this technology in that context at the moment.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's plausible. Yeah.
I don't know, a lot of the conversations you see online about when announcements have been made, like, you know, such and such is conference has either sort of been cancelled or it's moved online. A lot of people, oh, well, we're going to miss out on the person-to-person networking more than anything else.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing. So could that be a way of replacing it, setting up virtual reality environments where people could, you know, it feels like you're at the conference, you're there together in sort of rooms with people, but not in like a kind of quite formal video conferencing setup, perhaps. Like I say, it's just something I got thinking about as I was reading through it.
I've not done a virtual conference yet. Sapphire, I was going to go to, for real, that's going to be virtually, it's going to be a month later. That doesn't really matter, but it's, you know, but they seem to be putting a lot of effort into making it as good as possible. So it'll be interesting to see it. Yeah, but like you say, it's quite a kind of passive experience.
Yeah, I think it's quite hard as well. Like the thing about being at a conference is you are it's quite easy, and you can justify it, like sort of ignoring what's going on in the office while you're at a conference. You're in the conference bubble, and you can kind of like, okay, particularly if you're in a different time zone, you can kind of think, okay, well, I can ignore those emails. I can, all that stuff on my to-do list in the office, I can forget about this week while I'm there. But when you're in a virtual conference, you're still at home, you're still in your working office. I think that would be a lot harder to do. So I think it's, yeah, so it's kind of finding ways to still create that conference bubble, if you will. There's no other distractions. You're still there in the action, but you're not being distracted by other things going on around you that might be, like I say, vying for your writing time in our case. Or I think it is, it'll be a real challenge. I hope they, you know, do pull it off, because I'd quite like not to have to travel so much.
Exactly.
So, exactly.
I bet there are people who are just straining at the leash to get back on board a plane and fly to San Francisco. And
well, I don't want to cast any aspersions about our readership, but there's a kind of recurring joke, I guess, that a lot of people who are on the conference circuit keep making, like, oh, there's going to be a lot of people who aren't going to be able to see their second families this year because of, you know, maybe dalliances they've had while out and about traveling over the years. Yeah, so there's that aspect to it. I mean, yeah, like I say, it has huge potential to sort of change, you know, the way we work generally, all of this stuff, the pandemic, you know, everything going on pandemic at the moment. Yeah, so it'd be interesting to see how all that shakes out, you know, once this eventually reaches an end. I mean during this period we've already heard about a number of retailers that have entered administration. So for example, when lockdown lifts and we get out of here and we start going to the shops, like, what is going to be left on the high street for us to go and visit and go and buy and things like that? But there's also, yeah, there's a lot of talk now that the fact so many people can do their jobs from home might lead to an uptick in the number of people who opt to work remotely permanently once all this is over, for example. Yeah. So for work-life balance reasons, predominantly. And there was a Gartner report written by Joe O'Halloran, our networking editor, along those lines this week. He said that more than two-thirds of employees are likely to continue working remotely once the pandemic ends. So that kind of suggests this may lead to a permanent shift in working habits. And I think that's quite interesting, because this is a big change. It's something huge we've all got to adapt to. Also, I think it might force maybe people who've, maybe bosses or whatever, who've previously had prejudices or misconceptions, you know, if people are working from home, how productive are they? You know, all that thing about presenteeism, about people, I need people and see people in front of me working.
Yeah.
You know, get rid of all of that. It proves you know, not necessarily the case. It could have huge implications on how we all work in the future, just as everything, because we don't know how long this is going to go on for. It's an annoying phrase, but, you know, time will tell. That's all I can say, really.
It may become more normal for a lot of people to work from home. I mean, we all work from home a fair bit anyway, but I've been joking that it's not been a huge difference for me to go from 3 or 4 days a week working from home to 5. But, you know, lots of people really don't, and it is alien to them and it's new to them. And I think once that initial, it's a bit of a lark, you know, once they were past that and passing around lots of jokes and stuff, I think it's probably, you know, going to have a dulling effect on a lot of people who are not used to working that way. I know, Claire, you've been looking at some of the mental health implications of people working from home.
Yeah, I have. And I think that one of the most important things to point out is, as you've just suggested, it doesn't work for everyone to work this way. So not only do you have, you know, like people that don't necessarily use technology that much and might find it quite stressful to suddenly have to engage with technology for a majority of their work, but also people who are a bit more extroverted, who need that human contact, who like to chat to people, that are struggling a little bit because they're not having that face-to-face contact, or they, you know, sometimes when you're working from home, you can't build in having a coffee break or having a lunch break in the same way that you can when you're in the office, especially if you're now having to look after kids and stuff as well. So I think it's important to just remember that if it doesn't work for you, that's okay as well. Because I think that a lot of people are going to feel, you know, like an increased level of distress for various reasons. And so everyone has to be mindful that just because they're doing okay doesn't mean anybody else is doing okay. And that you don't have to be doing okay as well. You know, like, don't be putting pressure on yourself. Brian, just because you have plans to suddenly become an expert at guitar, read all of your books, and, you know, like watch all of your television programs. It's sort of an unnecessary amount of pressure to put on yourself.
Finish my novel, or indeed begin it.
Yeah, I'll not read all of your books. Write all of your books. Write your children's book about the
Watercraft of Venice.
Yeah,
Surefire winner.
Yeah, so it's okay if that hasn't happened for you yet. So I've been looking at different bits and bobs about mental health and working from home and the increased use of tech. And I've listened to a couple of, you know, like webinars from different places about people who are managing teams at this time as well. I think something that's come up quite a lot in those different webinars is how important communicating is. So be communicating with the rest of your team and with other people, not just about what you're working on, but also about how you're feeling. Have some empathy for other people. I looked at the NHS Every Mind Matters website and also the Minds Charity website on some of the ways that they're telling people to kind of cope with the current situation. So we can make sure that the links for that are in sort of like the summary for the podcast page, so you can go and have a look at them. But basically, staying connected with other people, don't take isolation literally. You know, don't shut down from everyone. Don't, you know, like overexert yourself with that. Because like you were saying, Caroline, you know, you have to have some boundaries as well.
Yeah.
just because you could schedule a Zoom meeting every 5 minutes of the day doesn't mean that you should. That's clearly, you know, like not healthy for everyone. Talking about your feelings is important. Everybody's feeling a bit weird. You know, like don't be a martyr and like pretend that you're coping and carrying on with stuff when actually it's really getting to you. I think if you talk about how you're feeling, you'll find out that quite a lot of other people are feeling the way that you are as well, and will be relieved to talk about it and share it. Take care of your body. You know, you are allowed to do your mandated hour of exercise. Is that still a thing? I haven't really checked the news.
Yeah, apparently. I haven't done it, but yeah, people are really, really enjoying that, apparently.
Just say like you're allowed to like leave your house, your flat or whatever, but actually this whole thing about it being an hour is a bit of a myth.
Well, it would take someone who runs regularly, you know, like less than an hour to get a distance that it might take another person to walk an hour.
And then you got to get back, so
yeah.
What do you do? So I live here now, wherever I've collapsed.
But basically, don't let your body health fall by the wayside either, just because, you know, like it's tempting to stay at home, sit by your laptop for the full amount of the workday, but getting up, taking regular breaks. You're not doing stuff, for example, like traveling. If you normally go to the office, you might do a certain amount of walking to and from stations that you're not doing now. So it's important to like look after your body as well. Don't spend too much time watching the news, which is one that I took a little bit too seriously because I obviously don't know what the rules are.
I was going to say, there was a guy, I saw a tweet this week, which I quite enjoyed. Some guy was like, I've just stopped watching the news because I'm pretty sure, it's so depressing. I'm pretty sure if all this ends, someone will tell me. I think that's quite a good attitude. I think I'm going to adopt that.
Yeah, I mean, know what the rules are around social distancing, when you need to be inside and what you can leave the house for, which I think has been very clearly publicised.
Yeah, it's been well communicated.
Other than that, if you're excessively checking the news just to find out the latest developments, it can seem a little bit overwhelming. So don't be scared to take a break from the news if you need to. And having a routine as well. If during normal life you will have a routine that, you know, dictates when you get up and when you go to bed, when you eat, when you're outside, when you're talking to people, when you're not talking to people. So just make sure that you've established a routine that sort of matches the routine that you would have outside of isolation to make you feel a little bit more in control, was a bit of advice. And I think that, you know, those are the main pieces of advice that I have been seeing around and about. There was some stuff on the Mind website about managing teams in this time that we can put in the description of the podcast, but it was about making sure that you have work-life balance and, you know, like checking in with your team consistently to make sure that everyone's doing okay under the circumstances. So it's that communication factor again, which technology is enabling quite a lot now, so that's good.
Kind of finding the right level of communication.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I thought that's a really, really good point making, Claire, about like other types of people. So, I mean, I'm quite an introverted person and I'm a writer first and foremost, really. So this might not seem like such a big deal to me, but for maybe a salesman or woman, very extroverted, you know, this will be much more kind of stressful for them and much more trying for them.
Yeah, it did seem to be all of the memes on the internet at the beginning of that outbreak were about how introverts have been training for this their whole lives. Mm-hmm. But then nobody really spared a thought for the extroverts who, you know, they need interaction with other people.
Yeah, no, but it must be. But it's a really important point. It's that kind of imagination, like understand, especially if you're managing people, that you need to be able to put yourself in their shoes, which is more easy to do if you see them every day, but it's not so easy to do if you don't.
Yeah, I think that's why it's important as well, back on the point of talking about your feelings. It's not always easy to read from digital communication how someone's actually feeling about something.
Thanks so much for that, Claire. Now, a group of people who are used to working from home, working on their own, are data scientists. Although they also are people who kind of thrive on collaboration. You know, the way data science works is quite a collaborative thing as well. Well, there was a story that emerged this week about how data scientists are passionately keen to make a difference and to help through this situation. This was the data scientists and data engineers at Rolls-Royce. It's called R Squared Data Labs is their kind of data science unit. There's about 300 odd worldwide of data scientists and data engineers. And what they've done is they've set up an alliance of data analytics experts from other places, not just themselves. So they've got IBM, Google Cloud, involved on the IT supplier side, but also Leeds University, Leeds Open Data Institute, etc. One of the things I really liked about the story is it's got a kind of real Yorkshire feel to it, because the woman who's the director of the labs is Caroline Gorski, and that's where she lives. And Rolls-Royce have got this centre in Derby as well, so it was, you know, I made a change from the usual kind of London-centric thing. What they're calling this thing emergent, and what they're getting everyone to do, this alliance, is to look for signs of economic recovery, especially as we go forward beyond the kind of pandemic phase. And this started, Caroline was telling me, with, if you remember, the ventilator challenge of about 4 weeks ago. Matt Hancock announced to try and get as many British manufacturers as possible to kind of repurpose themselves and make ventilators. And Rolls-Royce was one of those, and they have done that. But the data scientists were all thinking, well, you know, we would like to help too, so what can we do? And they came up with this idea, and very much focusing on the kind of economic signs of economic recovery, and also going beyond traditional data sets that are used for kind of business and economics conventionally, but also looking at what human beings are actually doing. So they'll be looking at retail transactions, finance transactions, but also sentiment analysis, social media, but also just how, like, physically people are moving. So from a Rolls-Royce point of view, their hypothesis, they're going to look at changing patterns of, you know, within aviation industry data to see things like cargo being flown, senior executives being flown on corporate jets, if that starts to happen. So little kind of weak signals that indicate where signs of economic recovery are going to be happening. And they're doing this globally because, you know, this virus doesn't respect borders, does it? And in the global south, this is going to be a terrible thing. It sounded really interesting what their plan for this. I mean, we'll see. It's like she came up with the idea on the 16th of March. So it's only been going for 4 weeks. Mm. They've already got a few partners on board. They're looking for others. And and the data science community that she knows and is aware of locally, but also beyond, you know, beyond just Rolls Royce, is she's just really passionate about this. And I was very impressed by the kind of passion. And our colleague Cliff Saarin has led her in the current issue of the issue that's just going to press of the e-zine is all about IT professionals as heroes. You know, because IT professionals have enabled the working from home that we're talking about.
I'm sure a lot of them have been working a lot more than the normal amount as well, just trying to make sure that everything works, or acting as sort of like a help desk if people can't seem to make their technology work as well.
Mm-hmm.
So looking after their health, their mental health, is extremely important. I would imagine that it would be really easy to get burnt out when you're working, you know, like a constant amount to try and make sure that all of the company's tech is working.
Yeah, I guess it's also as well, you don't know, well, given the suddenness of us all having to work remotely, some people might be having to use personal devices or just trying to, you know, make a patchwork of kit together just so they can work from home. So you've got those IT workers who are like, they don't actually know like the kit that they're trying to triage. If like someone's like, oh, this doesn't work, like, well, I don't know what you're using, you know. It's it must be so hard for those guys at the minute.
Yeah,
firing blind, whole new set of challenges.
Yeah, and that's really important. That's on the infrastructure side. So this data science thing, I think, well, we'll see what kind of results it really produces. But the idea is to really help decision makers in companies and at government level to make the right decisions in terms of where investment should go, in order to make sure that the economic recovery when it comes is going to be it's going to be as effective as possible, really. Because is it Rishi Sunak and all that, they keep saying, well, we're not going to be able to save every single business. So there will be kind of choices to be made by companies and by. And it's the key thing with the economy, and I'm not an economist, but it's confidence, isn't it? Because if you feel confident, you will, you know, buy that new car, or if you're a firm, you will invest and you will employ new people and invest in new products. But if you're not feeling confident, you know, you're not going to do that. So I think finding those signs in order to generate confidence is possibly going to be quite important. And there are some signs of, as we were saying earlier, about virtual events beginning to happen. I'm getting SAP popping up in my inbox again after a period of silence. So Sapphire will happen virtually. Either of you seeing any conferences emerging into the virtual realm?
Not at the moment. I was supposed to go to Google Cloud Next, but I was supposed to have been there last week or the week before. Postponed the virtual one, which was so that's not happening. But I think I wrote a story this week actually, just a roundup of what all the big cloud guys are doing to sort of support their clients through COVID-19. And yeah, Google are doing loads and loads of different initiatives. So I'm guessing it's probably a case of, do this conference, or do we throw all our techies, do we tie them up in conference sessions, or do we put them to work? So I think they've probably taken that decision, to be honest, to go put them to use elsewhere and do their bit to help, really. Yeah.
Because events do, I mean, and normally events do tend to define our calendar, what we're doing next week, things like that. Well, I'm afraid that's all we've got time for this week, I think. Just remains me to say, as usual, thank you very much to Caroline.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much to Claire.
Anytime.
Thank you very much to you for listening, and take care. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.